The Brandon McMillan Podcast is brought to you by Lucy Pet Food. Why feed Lucy Pet Food? Because they specialize in gut health, which is vital to the overall health of your dog. I feed it to all my dogs because it works. Go check them out today at lucypetfood.com. COVID-19 and your pets, what do they have in common? Well, today we'll talk with Dr. Julie Reck as she gives us all the facts, all the data, and most importantly, debunks all the myths we're hearing on the internet. All today on the Brandon McMillan Podcast. All right, we have a question from Julie from Michigan. She says, "Hello, Brandon. I'm writing to ask you about a question for my daughter's dog. The dog jumps on anybody and everybody who walks into the front door. How do I train the dog to stop doing this? Thank you. Love what you do. Julie." Okay, so Julie, I'm going to give you two options here. And as always, the answers I always give people are what I like to refer to as high percentage techniques. And I call them high percentage techniques because the success rate is high percentage. There's a lot of ways to stop a dog from jumping, but there's probably about 50 ways that really I find little to moderate success. And the two ways I'm going to give you right now, I find this to be very high rate success. The first technique is very simple. All I want you to do is every time you know someone's coming to that front door, you're going to put the dog on the leash. From there, what you're going to do is you're going to step on the leash where it hits the ground. You're going to let it hit the ground, and where it drags on the ground, like 3 or 4 inches, step on it right there. I know this is very hard to understand because I'm talking about it. I'm much better at demonstrating these things. So picture this. You have the leash on the dog's collar where it's going to go straight down the ground. Gravity's going to pull it to the ground. Wherever it hits the ground, it's going to bend and just kind of shoot across the floor. Right there, I want you to step on it about 3 or 4 inches from where it hits that bend. And the whole point of the technique is when you open the door, what's going to happen is the dog's going to start jumping right away, but your foot is stopping the dog from jumping. You literally created an anchor on the ground. As the dog starts jumping, I want you to say the word off firmly. I don't want you to ask the dog. I want you to tell him off. Remember, this is a command. This is a bad habit you're trying to solve. So I want you to make sure you tell the dog in a very stern manner, okay? So you're going to keep your foot on that leash. And when that leash stops the dog in his tracks, you're simply going to say the word off. Now, what typically happens here is the dog's going to jump about 3 or 4 times and eventually give up. When they finally give up, I want you to stand there for about 5 to 10 more seconds, and then you praise them. Then you give the treat if you want, okay? Don't give too many treats on something like this, because remember, it's a disciplinary command. Okay, now what's going to happen here is you're going to have to rinse and repeat it every time someone comes to the front door, okay? So usually after the dog learns it once with one person, they've kind of got it, but the next person that comes in, you gotta start all over, okay? So that's technique number one. Okay, technique number two is the da-da-da-da-da-da penny bottle. Look at it in all its glory. 20 Abraham Lincolns sitting in that empty water bottle. Thank you. I failed a career in singing and also acting, as you can tell, but I'm actually a pretty good dog trainer, and this is why I'm going to recommend using the penny bottle. Okay, the penny bottle, this is one of the best techniques to ever solve a dog jumping on people. So what I want you to do is simply have the penny bottle in your hand, and it's the same process. When somebody comes to the front door, you're going to open the front door. When the dog jumps up on them, I want you to say the word off, shake the penny bottle firmly, followed by another off command, okay? Now, you might ask, why does this work? Okay, why does the penny bottle stop dogs from jumping or stop dogs from doing a lot of things? I'll tell you why. Sound is a great trainer. When you have a disruptive sound, it disrupts the dog from their bad behavior. It's as simple as that, okay? It's just the same as going, ah, or saying no, but instead of yelling, instead of using this loud, you know, correction where you're yelling and screaming, you're letting the penny bottle do the screaming, okay? This way you don't have to yell, you don't have to scream. You simply let the penny bottle be the disruptive noise, and then you can firmly say with your voice off. You don't have to yell it. And just like the first technique, you'll probably have to do this on several people, because once the dog learns it with one person, you'll have to rinse and repeat when a new person comes to the front door. So again, first technique, step on the leash. Make sure you say the word off as the dog is jumping. And the second technique, penny bottle. As the dog is jumping, simply shake the penny bottle, say the word off, followed by another shake of the penny bottle. And as I said before, this is a very high percentage success rate. So, and keep in mind too, if you have a puppy that does this, that's the best time to solve the habit. Because remember, puppies, it all starts when the reason why dogs get the bad habit of jumping in the first place is because people love when puppies jump on them. People love it. They actually invite it. And what it does is it causes a bad habit. When a puppy is 8 weeks old, it is the cutest thing. Oh, look at him. He's jumping all over me, you know. And what you're doing, that's a first impression to a puppy. Okay, so suddenly when the dog hits 4 months, oh, he's still cute. He's still small enough. He can jump on me. It's fine. Suddenly the dog hits 6 months. And now let's say if it's a bigger dog like a lab or a golden, well, now he's starting to get pretty big. It's not so cute anymore, but you spent the first few months of his life teaching him this bad habit. So remember, if you have a puppy and you're allowing it to jump on you, you are actually teaching him that it's okay to jump, because it's all fun and games when they're that small. But wait till they hit 75 pounds and they start jumping on people. It's a whole different ball game. So that's just that's some advice to anybody who has a puppy. But if you get an older dog and they're still doing this, these are the preferred techniques that I like to solve that problem. So, great question with a simple solution.
Does your pet struggle with missing you while you're at work? Have they reached their senior years and need a little help feeling like themselves again? Or are you simply just looking for an awesome daily supplement for your currently healthy dog? Well, Pet Relief is on a mission to change what healthy means for pets. As the number one most trusted pet CBD company out there, they're doing just that. Their line of all-natural, safe, and organic supplements are perfect for pets, no matter what their age or health status is. From CBD hemp oils to bite-sized supplements called Edibites, capsules, topicals, and hemp protein bars, there's a holistic option for every one of your four-legged friends. And the best part is, their website provides a usage calculator where you can get a custom product recommendation based on your pet's specific needs. To give Pet Relief a try, simply use my promo code Brandon for 20% off your total purchase. To shop now and read more about CBD for your pet, check out Pet Relief's website, www.petrelief.com. That's spelled PETRELEAF.com. And by the way, one last note, I use their CBD on my dog Lulu. She's a 14 and a half old Chihuahua, and I've literally watched her life do a 180. They have amazing CBD products, so go check them out right now.
We're gonna be joined by Dr. Julie Reck, and she's the owner of the Veterinary Medical Center of Fort Mill, which is a 5-doctor small animal veterinary hospital just south of Charlotte, North Carolina. Dr. Reck is also the author of Facing Farewell. It's a book that assists people on hospice-type decision-making for their pets. She also works very closely with Fear Free to promote the emotional well-being of pets. During this COVID-19 pandemic, Dr. Reck is still serving her community on a daily basis, treating dogs and cats for illnesses, and she just wrapped up a 10-hour shift. Before we get started, I want to make sure that everything you're about to tell us is backed up by research, facts, and data, correct? Not just like news articles and sensationalized nonsense we see on the news every day, correct?
Exactly. Everything that I am going to say and reference is either going to come from a scientific study published in a prestigious journal, or it's going to be recommendations from governing bodies surrounding veterinary medicine or infectious disease. That would be the CDC, the AVMA, or the American Veterinary Medical Association, or the USDA.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. So the first question I have is the obvious one. And this is the big question everyone has right now, because there's a lot of misconception on this. Can dogs contract the coronavirus?
So the question, can they contract the coronavirus? The answer to that is yes. At this point in time, there have been two dogs in Hong Kong that have tested positive, the 17-year-old Pomeranian and the 2-year-old German Shepherd. But at this point in time, they've become positive, they are not becoming infected with active symptomatic disease processes. And at this point in time, which is April 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern time, I believe 6 p.m. your time, there is no evidence that a companion animal, meaning a dog or cat, has infected a person with COVID-19.
Got it. Okay, so what about cats then? Can cats contract the coronavirus?
So a lot has developed in the last 2 days about this. And yes, cats can contract the coronavirus. Now, they're going to get it from a close contact with an infected human. That's how our pets are getting it right now. And interestingly enough, our dogs are not becoming symptomatic. They are not an ideal host. The virus in a dog is able to identify the receptors. It's able to latch on, which is why a dog will test positive, but it's not replicating. So it's not causing infectious illness in dogs. In cats, we are seeing rare isolated episodes where cats are becoming symptomatic. We know of two companion animal cats that have become infected, one in Hong Kong and one in Belgium. The one in Hong Kong did not become symptomatic, but the one in Belgium had respiratory symptoms such as difficulty breathing, also vomiting and diarrhea. And just a few hours ago, there was the announcement that a tiger in at a New York Zoo tested positive.
I just read that. Yeah. Now tell me about that. How is that possible?
The tiger and several other of the big cats became symptomatic for respiratory illness. And one tiger was elected to be tested. And the reason they've only tested that one animal is that these big cats have to go under general anesthesia. So there's a lot of logistics as well as increased risk to testing multiple. So the veterinarians found a specific individual that they wanted to test, and that one did test positive. Those animals did have close contact previously to a zookeeper that did test positive. So again, it's important to realize that our animals, our dogs and cats, there is this potential for them to contract it from us if we are positive.
Okay. So let's back up to the dogs and the two dogs that we know of so far that had contracted the virus. They were both in China, correct?
Yeah, Hong Kong was the precise location for both
okay.
of them. One was 17-year-old Pomeranian. He went through the quarantine process and his owner was COVID positive. He ended up testing positive, went through quarantine. And my understanding is that 2 days after being released from quarantine, he passed away.
Now, hold on. Wait, let me stop you a second. Did he die from coronavirus or did he die from being 17 years old?
Great question. So he's 17-year-old Pomeranian. He had heart failure, was being treated for a variety of health conditions. And then he passed away and his owner refused to allow a necropsy to be performed. So we don't have any of that factual testing. But as a general practitioner of small animal medicine, 17-year-old Pomeranian that is oftentimes going to present with concerning illnesses that will lead to a fatality, not related to COVID. So in my, you know, the fact that he made it through the quarantine being positive, I don't think that this was related to the coronavirus. Everything that I can find thus far with the 2-year-old German Shepherd, not only has that pet remained non-symptomatic, but it is alive for everything that I can find with that.
Okay, cool. So let me ask you the obvious, because this is one that's been on my mind for a long time now. And because we know that, from what we know, at least, we know that the virus can live for a certain period of time on hard surfaces. They say cloth, it lives for like porous materials. It lives for a shorter period of time, correct?
Right.
But what about our dog's fur? I would almost, common sense would tell you that, okay, even if it can only live on the dog's fur for even 5 minutes, if I come home from the grocery store, there's a good chance I'm going to touch, you know, something at that grocery store and contract the virus. I open my door. What's the first thing a lot of us do? A lot of us pet our dogs. Hey, how you doing there? I love you so much. Oh, let me go wash my hands. We do this subconsciously sometimes. And then all of a sudden we wash our hands. We think we're clean. 10 minutes later, we sit in the couch and they come over and we're watching TV and we start petting them again. Is that a possibility?
Yes. So let's back up. And March 17th, the New England Journal of Medicine released a study where they tested the ability of coronavirus to survive on four types of surfaces: stainless steel, plastic, copper, and cardboard. So cardboard was their definition of a porous material. So on stainless steel and on plastic, it was staying present for about 72 hours. The virus did not do well on the copper at all. So just a few hours there. And on cardboard was present for up to 24 hours. So we've taken that information and we've kind of transposed it to how it could behave on other porous substances. That's money, fabric, cloth, and fur. So the answer is that it is possible that a pet that would be exposed to secretions that are either transmitted on our fingertips or on other surfaces in our household or elsewhere could then latch on to the fur and temporarily be a means of transferring that virus. And myself, as well as the other 35 people that are part of my veterinary hospital, we are acutely aware of the risk of that. That being said, it is deemed to be minimal at this time. It is still unlikely, with the primary mode of transmission of this disease being person to person, meaning that you and I are in physical contact with each other, you know, within that 6 feet parameters, and are exchanging those viral particles directly. It's really important right now that even when you get into your vehicle, that you have either paper towels with rubbing alcohol or some means, if you can get access to some Clorox bleach wipes or even hand sanitizer, which is, I know, rare right now. But even if you can do that prior to, driving away to your household, that's really important. But make sure that before you interact with that pet, you are washing your hands, and that you would be as comfortable exposing yourself as you would to a human family member prior to interacting with your pet. They need the same level of protection that a person in our household would. So if you have, if you're willing to kiss your children, your husband, now you are ready to go ahead and interact with your pet. So the same safety standards and social distancing, really, as well. Making sure that, you know, just because we have to stay away from our neighbors right now, but if you're on that flexi leash and your pet walks 20 feet over to the neighbor and gets pet, and then you go ahead and then interact with your pet, that is definitely not the social distancing we're looking for or recommending right now.
So basically, you want your pet to be social distancing just the same as you are. What about saliva or even the tip of their nose? How that's always moist. Can that potentially contract the virus? Because when a dog, I mean, as we all know, dogs, they explore the world with their noses. So yes, if you're walking them on the street, whether it's a park bench or anything, dogs love to put their noses on things or even lick things. Do we know that their saliva carries it?
And I'm going to answer that question really, really carefully, because technically, if they bump the physical surface of, let's say, a counter that has the coronavirus and it bumps their nose, and then the coronavirus just jumps onto to their nose particles and there's some wet moisture particles, and then he kisses your face, the answer to that question is yes. If we go back to our pets that were in Hong Kong that were contracted positive and, you know, do technically have those viral particles in their saliva and feces, the answer, can you contract the illness from them that way, so far, is no. There is zero evidence of that happening. So just remember, it is possible it can just jump from surface to surface. And if that includes the wet surface of their tongue, their nose, so forth, then yes. Me personally, in my practice, just because they're swallowing and salivating, and again, that those secretions actually flush away from the body, probably go away faster than the particles that are just sitting on their fur. Because
is that true?
Come off. That is my interpretation of that. I have, again, there is not any article that I've seen with that. But again, if they were to lick a countertop, that's probably just not going to they're going to probably swallow the viral particles faster than a 24-hour period than it will be on their fur.
What if they lick something and kiss you within the first 20, 30 minutes after? Is that a possibility?
It could be. I think it would be very rare and unexpected, but I think that there could be the remote possibility that that could happen. But again, yeah, it's not because they would be transmitting it as the scientific term is a fomite, like just like the countertop could. not because he's infected with coronavirus. He's just the vehicle that it got to you through.
Now, is there anything on the market? I'm not aware of anything, but is there any safe wipe that we could give our pets that we can wipe them a few times daily that's not dangerous to them? I mean, obviously, I'm not going to take an alcohol wipe and wipe my dog's face. Is there something that kills viruses that we could take precautionary measures that equivalent to us washing our hands 500 times a day right now? What can we do with our pets besides bathe them, you know, 5 times a day?
There is not anything that exists right now that would be safe and reasonable to apply that we could say guarantees any kind of viral transmission. You know, we don't want to be Lysoling the pet. We don't want to be dunking them in bleach or anything like that. In fact, when you actually go to the current AVMA recommendations, they're just saying, quote, good grooming and hygiene right now, which is a very, very loose definition.
A broad definition.
Very broad.
A good bath work, maybe. I mean, hey, look, most of us, you know, we don't bathe our dogs once a day, but if we just as a precautionary measure, because I'm pretty sure after this talk is done, everyone's going to rush to the bathroom right now and they're going to bathe their animals.
Right.
Which is actually not a bad idea, but I mean, is a good bath going to get rid of the virus? If we do a head to toe bath?
That is going to help dramatically just because the physical, mechanical action of the water hitting the fur is going to probably knock those viral particles off of that porous substance. We know it's not doing really well in general. It's kind of getting sucked up into those porous substances and it's having a hard time latching on to actually be transmitted. So I think by the time you add in the mechanical action of the water and also the soap and the sudsing of the soap, I don't think that it will do very well, and it's probably a great idea. It's a great option if your pet has been exposed to people outside of your household. For whatever reason, something's happened, and you want to just be very, very, very cautious. For instance, take the patients that came into my veterinary hospital today. So those patients needed care today. I treated them myself. I touched them. My technicians that were assisting me went ahead and touched them. And then they went back to the vehicle with their pet parent because we aren't having any clients actually in the clinic right now just to help limit the exposure while we treat patients. That would be a great instance where going home, giving the pet a bath, washing your hands, and doing those two activities before anybody touches their face would be something that would be out of an abundance of caution, but could be a good idea.
Okay, so what do you suggest be the protocol then for people with pets to just basically do a daily regimen of, you know, wash their hands, obviously start with, you know, bathing their pet, but what would you recommend the precautionary measures be for people with pets just in every household?
I think this is great. So right now, the AVMA, the USDA, and many of the veterinary virologists out there, their statement is that at this point in time, the pets are way more at risk for getting this from us than we are from getting it from them. Okay? So what I want to make clear is that we really want to limit the possibility that the pets could get these particles of the virus on their fur and so forth. So we want to make sure that before and after we interact with them, that we are monitoring our own hygiene. Wash your hands really well. That is really hard when we're really intimate with these pets. That being said, if we're applying the social distancing that is recommended, not only to the two-legged members of the household, but also the four-legged members. And if we know that nobody has had additional physical contact with the outside world, that nobody has gone to the store and then touched the dog, like that has not happened in 24 hours, we can begin to relax a little bit on some of those hygienic concerns. Then if there is a new entry of exposure, either someone outside the household touched the pet, someone in the pet went out of the household shopping and then touched the pet, those kinds of things, then we need to really be thoughtful with hand washing before and after we interact with our pets. The other thing I think that's really important for households with pets right now is that they enact a plan for what are we going to do for our pet's care if either ourselves or someone in the household is suspected or tests positive for COVID. And right now, the recommendation is that should that happen, that the individual that is positive no longer directly care for that pet. So if it is a household with multiple individuals, then people that are not ill or under suspicion, they can directly serve the pet, meaning walk it, feed it, do all the basic needs. But it is really important. The animals that have tested positive have had extremely close contact with humans that were COVID positive. So we right now the recommendation is to really limit that. It's interesting. There is a veterinarian that has created a blog out there, and I think it's Worms and Germs. And he did a great blog post on what would be the absolute best protocol for caring for a pet if you're COVID positive. And if that were to happen, the absolute best thing is to enact somebody who has contracted the virus but recovered. That's the best individual to take care of your pet if you end up being COVID positive. I don't actually have anybody in my inner circle right now that would fit for that, but it is really a good idea to begin to start thinking about how are we going to make sure that the pet's basic needs are met if either yourself or someone in your household were to test positive.
All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. So years ago, I used to think that all dogs had bad breath and that's just the way it is. But as time went on, I started learning a little more about it, and I started learning that a dog's bad breath could potentially be a sign of dental disease, which is actually the number one illness in pets, which leads to heart failure, kidney disease, and even shorter lifespans. Well, Teef is a product that you easily add to your dog's or cat's water bowl. It's made with Protekin 42, which is a prebiotic powder that safely targets dental disease where it starts below the gum line. Teef is all natural, human grade, and veterinary approved that is non-toxic and safe. There's no artificial flavors, colors, fillers, or preservatives. It's tasteless and odorless and promotes strong teeth, healthy gums, and fresh breath. Teef is brought to you by Primal Health. And for 20% off and free shipping on the entire cart, and who does not love a deal, enter Brandon on their website at teefhealth.com. Now make sure you get this right. I'm not saying teeth, I'm saying teef. That's T-E-E-F, as in Frank, health.com. I've actually been using this on my Chihuahua Lulu for a little while now, and it's made her breath substantially better. And if you can make that breath better, then anything is possible. So go check them out right now. It's a great company. So do you have a dog that their nails grow like weeds, like I do? My dog Lulu, she's a Chihuahua, and anybody who has a Chihuahua, they can attest that their nails literally grow like Edward Scissorhands. And because of this, I've tried a lot of different nail clippers over the years, but the one I like right now that I'm using consistently is called the Zen Clipper Precise. And what it is, it's this really cool clipper that actually features this little laser etched marking for consistent measuring. So what this means is you determine how much nail you want to cut and easily adjust the blade using the thumb wheel. So in other words, if your dog moves around a lot, no matter if they're moving or not, it actually is going to clip the nail exactly where you adjust that wheel. So that's the cool part about it. It clips the tip, not the quick. And trust me, if you ever got the quick of your dog, some of you, I'm sure some of you have, they never want to get their nails clipped again. It's a nightmare. So this thing, it's awesome. It has a sharp stainless steel blade that quietly clips instead of crushing the nail. And I've used those cheapos that actually crushes the nail. And then when I pull those out and my dog sees that, they just run for the hills. Give this one a try. It's worked on my Chihuahua, and if I got her over her fear of clipping nails, then you probably can too. So for 20% off and free shipping on the entire cart, enter the promo code Brandon when you order at petppi.com. That's petppi.com. Go check them out right now.
I want to make sure that I understand this right. So as we kind of wrap this up, it can pretty much it can live on fur, correct?
Yes. So, and there has not been a specific study testing this on pet fur, but based on the data from the New England Journal of Medicine and how it behaved on cardboard, the thought is that it is possible.
And is there is there a time frame where it can live on there and when it dies on there? Are we talking 24 hours?
The scientific community feels that it would not last longer than 24 hours on fur.
Okay, good. So I just want to make sure I understand this right, and for everyone watching, because I want to make sure that this is for, you know, our own good. Look, the whole point of this conversation was just to understand the facts, get the data out there, to point out the obvious here. You walk in from the store, your hands could potentially have something on it. Do not pet your dog. Do not pet your cat first. Go wash your hands and make sure, obviously, you know, everything is clean before you approach your pets. Is this a good protocol, you'd say?
100%. And there's not a person more at risk for getting this virus from human fur than veterinarians like myself that are out there practicing, seeing pets that are experiencing illnesses during this pandemic, my support staff. So believe you and me, we are aware of the risk. We do feel that the risk is minor to ourselves. I feel that even within the household, it's minor, but we have to accept that it could possibly happen. And we need to be responsible about that. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think the two of us are extremely passionate about animal care, animal welfare, and the last thing that we want are people abandoning their pets just out of fear. So I hope that this discussion has been helpful.
Yeah, well, it's been very helpful to me. Anything else you want to add, Julie? Because this is a wealth of information that I think not only I needed to hear, but I think everyone listening right now.
Yeah, I would like everybody to make sure that as stories break, as new information comes out, that they are getting their information from a trusted source. Be careful of news media outlets. If you are discovering, like the story with the tiger today, if you want to really understand the exact details, go to the USDA website. They have all of the information about the situation with the tiger, with great FAQs for exactly how pet owners should act. Right now, a common question is, oh my gosh, you know, especially with this tiger testing positive, should any cat that is experiencing respiratory symptoms, should it get tested for COVID right now? And at this point in time, the answer to that is no, from the governing bodies in veterinary medicine, no. Unless that cat has been, or dog has been, highly exposed to an individual that has been positive for COVID. So if I have a client and they're saying, yes, I've had COVID, I see the cat has respiratory or other illness symptoms, I'm actually going to contact my state veterinarian and begin a discussion with the South Carolina public health officials about, we might need to consider testing this cat, and everybody, you know, I need the authorities to be aware that this testing is going to begin to happen. But broad spectrum across the board, 6 weeks ago, before this was even an issue, I would see cats and dogs 2, 3, 4 times a day with respiratory symptoms. This is pre-COVID. So they're going to get respiratory illness, and most likely it's not related to COVID unless they've had extremely close contact with a positive individual.
Okay, what's that website again you recommend people go to?
I would like people to go for, related to the tiger story, the USDA. If you just type in USDA tiger COVID, it's going to pop right up. It's got everything you need to know about this latest detail. Also, the AVMA has got great information. They're going to keep that really, really up to date. But that's where we want to get information specifically about what is exactly being recommended for pets and their care, and what's the latest on possible transmission. Because once the media outlets, you know, that tiger story is out on every media outlet and it's spun 50 different ways. So we need to make sure we're getting that from a trusted source. I'm watching 5 minutes of news max a day because it's just not healthy.
Yeah. I'm actually reading one of the comments here, and it's a very good comment. I want you to comment on this. Somebody asked if you can touch base on the coronavirus vaccine for dogs. Is there a thing?
Yes. Okay, let's talk about that. So coronavirus, there are versions of this in almost every mammalian species, and it tends to have a specific virus that will like and adapt to one particular species. So for decades, there has been a virus that affects dogs, and it's a coronavirus. It will typically create mild GI symptoms. And a vaccine was created many, many, like several decades ago to help ward that off. A lot of vets are actually not even vaccinating for that coronavirus anymore, because in just in general, the overall immunity for dogs is really, really good for that. It's a very mild illness. And again, there's so many things that we do need to vaccinate for that that's one that has dropped off as one that's kind of non-essential. Cats also have their own specific coronavirus. It's called FIP, or feline infectious peritonitis. This does not at all transmit to people, but it is something that is their own unique virus, and we have the ability to test for that. So it's a great question, but that coronavirus is completely independent of this COVID-19 that's happening right now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, my head's spinning. I don't know about everybody else. Dr. Julie Reck, anything else you want to add? Otherwise, where can people find out more about you? Or do you want people to be able to contact you directly if they have any questions? Because I'm sure I don't want to blow up your inbox, as I'm sure at this point you're about to get 700 emails in the next hour.
You can reach me directly at Julie Reck, R-E-C-K, D-V-M, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. That's my handle on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, just Dr. Julie Reck.
Dr. Reck, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate your time.
All right, there you have it, folks. That is straight from the veterinarian's mouth. So I would highly advise you take her advice, because vets, let me tell you, and then at a time like this, especially when it comes to our pets, we have to trust their expertise, because they're the ones who are trained in this and they study this stuff every single day. So, all right, everyone, have a good night. Be good out there. Be safe. We're all in this together. Okay, that does it for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, share, rate, or review if you like this episode. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram at AnimalBrandon, Facebook at AnimalBrandon, and Twitter at Brandon McMillan. We are out of here. I will see you soon, folks. Till then, be good. Do you have a dog that sheds a lot? Well, I do. Every time I used to take my dog Coda to the groomer, they would use those de-shedding brushes that literally rip your dog's hair out from the bottom. Well, the hands-on gloves are much different, because all it's doing is removing the dog's hair that's already fallen off, but it's stuck inside the dog's coat, so it makes it much more comfortable and enjoyable for not only you and your dog. When I used to pull out those old classic de-shedding brushes, Coda would literally start running away from me and I'd have to chase him. It was like an episode of Benny Hill. But now when I pull out the hands-on gloves, he's like, oh, it's time to get groomed, baby. See for yourself why hands-on gloves are animal preferred and outperforming all other products across the board. Use coupon code Brandon for 20% off and free shipping only at handsongloves.com. That's handsongloves.com, H-A-N-D-S-O-N-G-L-O-V-E-S.